Welcome to Shattering Mist, a program devoted to what has become late, but at least finally, the largest segment of society. To those who've come to realize that the world's political, religious, economic, and media institutions are corrupt, that they are counterproductive, and that they cannot be fixed. Our phone number, if you would like to join in this awakening, is 877-300-7645. There have been at least a dozen articles in the mainstream media over the past 2 weeks that have focused on Obamanation, the president's unaffordable health care act. And they have all focused on the architect of that act. The man's name is Jonathan Gruber. He is an MIT economist that has an integrity issue. He was the architect of Obamanation. The reality is that Obamanation exists to restrict choice. It's like all government-imposed programs. You are told what you will accept. Choice is no longer available. If you opt out, you're penalized. If you opt in, you're penalized. If you want something different, it's not available to you. And the whole notion of this plan was to provide the kind of plan that the most liberal individuals thought was ideal. That would be plans with very generous maternity coverage. You're like my wife and I, and you're independently, privately employed, and she's had a hysterectomy, and I've had a vasectomy, and our children are grown. You know, we really don't want health care with maternity coverage, but we don't have a choice anymore. I have never done drugs. I am a proponent of legalizing all drugs, but I have never done drugs. I am not going to start now that I'm approaching 60. I don't want illegal or prescription treatment for drug addiction in my policy. I no longer have a choice. It's included. I have to pay for it. I don't suffer from any mental illness, nor does my wife. We don't want coverage for treatment of mental illness in our policies. We've never had it before, but under Obamanation, we now have to have it. I've never wanted dental or eye coverage in my policies, but Obamanation says we need to have it. It doesn't matter what we want. It doesn't matter what we want to pay for. And it was interesting, as we renewed our policies this past year, not only weren't we able to choose the policy we wanted, not only weren't we able to choose the plan and the doctor we wanted, contrary to the Obamanators' lies, but the cost of the policies that were the nearest what we previously had were triple. The premiums tripled. Some Affordable Care Act, huh? Not only that, the deductibles skyrocketed. And deductibles went up thousands upon thousands of dollars, quintupling. It was an absolute joke. Everything we were promised was the antithesis of what we were promised. I wasn't surprised. Deductibles skyrocketed, premiums skyrocketed, quality of care plummeted, choices deteriorated. And the whole plan then, as we hired other employees and did things around our farm, what we found is exactly what I suspected. That the reason the Obamanator is spending millions advertising his fiasco on college campuses is because what he's trying to do is to lure the unsuspecting, those who have yet to work for a living, those who have never developed the sense of what is and isn't appropriate or affordable. And those who have never been in the health care coverage before, to overpay. So when we tried to get policies for our newer employees, young men in most cases, a couple of young women, what we found is that policies that 2 years ago would have provided excellent coverage with minimal copay and tiny deductibles were now three and four times what they had previously been. The whole idea of the Obaminator is to make the young and the healthy overpay so that those who have been less than judicious in their lifestyles could underpay. It was the whole idea. That's how we got it through Congress, by promising that it would have no negative effect on the budget, on the deficit. That, of course, was a lie. Because there is no reason to suspect that young people are going to overpay for inferior coverage just so that other people can have better coverage and underpay. We ended up giving the newer employees additional cash contributions and said, you know, you can choose whatever you wish to do with it, but, this is now foolish. We're not required to give you health care, and it'd be damned if we're going to overpay for it. So here's the money. You can do with it as you wish. Well, beyond all of the lies, beyond the government grab of control, the government wanting to control everyone's lives, beyond the inefficiency of nationalization and billions of dollars spent trying to write code for this plan that has never functioned properly, we are now finding that the architect of the plan, Jonathan Gruber, was a liar, just like the man that hired him, the Obaminator. Washington, CNN. At a town meeting where he campaigned for the health care legislation in 2009, President Barack Obama pledged to voters that he did not want any tax on health insurance plans he perceived as wastefully generous to ever impact average Americans. But in recent comments by one of the men who helped draft the legislation, the MIT economist Jonathan Gruber, that is not only precisely what will happen, but that was the intention of the tax. He not only lied, he was aware that it was a lie at the time that he was making the statement. The White House officials have had no comment, despite it repeated requests by CNN. They're in quite a pickle. At issue is the tax on so-called Cadillac plans, more expensive employer-provided health care plans. These are plans that were provided by quality companies for top-ranking, if you have expensive employees, you'd offer them a really top-notch plan. Now, GE did it. You know, GE doesn't have inexpensive employees, and they offered top-notch plans to their employees. All those plans have now been considered to be Cadillac plans. Now, you know, the average GE employee, while well compensated, is still middle class. Now, those plans now receive a tax from the federal government. The plan that we previously had is inferior in terms of the things covered to the plan that we had to buy. We were dictated by Obamination. Now, the other plan now is not even not only offered, but aspects of the plan that we liked are considered Cadillac, even though there is more areas of coverage in the plan that is legislated. It all depends on whose fins and whose bumper is on this Cadillac, I suspect. Well, employers do not currently have to pay taxes on health insurance plans. Well, that's amazing. You know, they're required to provide them, and now the government wants them to pay a tax on what they're already paying for. Starting in 2018, companies that provide health insurance that costs more than $10,000 for an individual or $27,000 for a family will have to pay a 40% tax. Isn't that amazing? You're providing something for your employees, and now you're going to pay a fine that's going to be called a tax on that very thing. At a town meeting, it's amazing that the Supreme Court didn't completely overturn this. But it tells you that the Supreme Court has nothing to do with the U.S. Constitution anymore. At a town hall meeting on health care in July of 2009 in Shaker Heights, Ohio, Obama explained the thinking of the Cadillac tax, and it was to target plans that spent unnecessarily and excessively, thus driving up health care costs. Well, the fact is that if somebody is willing to pay a lot for insurance, that doesn't drive up the cost of health care. There's no direct correlation between these things. But that's why a guy that has never even worked in a McDonald's saying, "Would you like fries with that too, ma'am?" shouldn't be having such an influence on the American economy. He would say, so one that's a lot more expensive and a lot fancier than one that even members of Congress get. Yeah, there you go. There's no such thing as a fancy healthcare plan. Nothing fancy about these plans. And the plans are expensive primarily because of pre-existing conditions and age. The reality is that once you turn about 75 to 80, the health insurance company knows that about 80% of the healthcare that we spend in your entire life is going to be wasted trying to extend your life a year or two. And so plans become prohibitively expensive because health care is prohibitively expensive because we don't use it as health care. We use it as life extension care. And that's the only reason they become prohibitively expensive, unless somebody has a pre-existing condition. And now you're going to fine them for that? What a moron. Health care costs. Expensive health care insurance isn't one of them. In fact, to infer that it is says that you are an absolute ignoramus, which would be the case of the President of the United States, or completely disingenuous. You take your pick. Either way, it's not qualified to be president. Let me share with you some of the things that drive up health care costs. The single most expensive is when the United States passed Medicare. Back in the time of Lyndon Baines Johnson, for you Texans, when he became president following the assassination of Kennedy, he wanted to impose the Great Society, you know, his version of the Cadillac Society. And as part of that, he came up with this notion of Medicare and Medicaid for his Great Society. It's these two things that had the greatest effect at driving up health care costs. In Medicaid and Medicare's case, well, let's take Medicare first, which is the government providing health care coverage for the elderly. The enormous cost, sometimes in the many hundreds of thousands of dollars, sometimes in the millions of dollars, of medicating and hospitalizing elderly patients so that they can, their lives can be prolonged a year, typically unhappily, typically uncomfortably, is the direct result of Medicare. Without Medicare, most people, most individuals, and most families would have no interest in paying $1 million or even hundreds of thousands to extend life. They would take the option that sane people do, that when your body deteriorates to the point where you go to the doctors and the doctor says, "I can't fix this, you're old, you know, your organs are shutting down, you know, that's it, you come to the end of your life." that you you bring in hospice. And hospice will provide support, a drug regimen to eliminate pain, allow you to spend your waning days in your home around family. Spectacular and efficient organization. But instead, you can have the government pay for it. That's why there's so many of these retirement homes. That's why there's so many of these halfway hospitals for the warehousing the elderly. We drove up the cost. And I want to tell you, that's a huge percentage of the mess. Is what Medicaid and Medicare did, particularly Medicare, to transfer the burden of the last 2 years of the elderly's life away from their families, away from individuals, to the government, which is not responsible, makes very poor choices, and it has skyrocketed the cost of health care because 80% of the money is spent in the last 2 years of a person's life. The other thing that has added astronomically to it is the lack of tort reform. Because there are awards for drugs, you know, if 0.1% are harmed by a drug, and it benefits 98% and the rest, you know, are just left unaffected. That 0.1% can not only sue the drug company, but can prevail and sometimes get awards in the billions of dollars. It's a huge part of what drives up the healthcare cost. The FDA, a government agency overseeing the legalization of a drug, slows the process down and costs $1 billion. Huge influence on the cost of medications. Those two things, if you had dealt with them, which Obamacare didn't deal with either, you could have radically made healthcare more efficient, less costly, and then change Medicare so that the government no longer pays exorbitant amounts of money for the last 2 years of a person's life. Part of the problem, too, is excessive tests. There's incentive for doctors to order every test under the sun. Why? Because they make money on it. The hospital makes money on it. They mitigate potential liabilities. They say, yeah, we ran that test. But they're unnecessary. Those are the kinds of things that make a difference. Medicaid became extraordinarily expensive because those that make no contribution or a limited contribution that either aren't working, don't want to work, or all of a sudden given insurance. And if you go and check with any doctor, they'll say that it's those that aren't paying for the treatment that are the most likely to sue you. It's a double whammy. They're giving something for free, they don't respect it, and then they go sue the doctors, driving up their insurance. These are the problems. I'd like to bring your attention to an article that just appeared. The doctor and father of a 13-year-old girl who died after undergoing female genital mutilation have been acquitted in Egypt. The doctor was cleared on charges alongside the father. When the doctor carried out the father's wishes to mutilate the genitals of his 13-year-old daughter. Although female genital mutilation is officially banned in Egypt, it's cases like this that say, you know, it's only banned for the purpose of us continuing to elicit large donations from America, because we're going to do it anyway. You know what percentage of Egyptian girls between the ages of 6 and 50, of Egypt's total population of females between the age of 60 and 50, do you know what percentage have had their genitals mutilated by their parents? 90%. Would you like to know what percentage of Egypt is Islamic? 90%. It's the nature of Islam. a direct consequence of Islam is to mutilate the genitals of little girls. Somewhere between 125 and 250 million girls will worldwide have been brutalized in this way by their Muslim parents. This is a savage religion, and the savagery of this religion goes very wide and very deep. Just thought you ought to know. Well, as I shared with you, there were a number of things that could have been done that would have had a profound influence on health care costs in America and the deficit in America. One is that if you're going to receive free health care, A, that you be a legal resident of this country, B, that there's some reasonable copay associated with it, and if you can't pay it at the time, then you pay it off over time. C, that if you're receiving a benefit from the government for your health care, that you can't sue the health care provider. Three, that we diminish the time and the costs associated with the approval of drugs and medical procedures and devices by about 90%, maybe 95%. Five, that we change the whole tort system and eliminate the concept of punitive damages relative to litigation. Maximize the amount that the lawyer can take of the overall fee so there's not so much ambulance chasing. Reduce these things. You know, make a profound difference. Change Medicare so that there's a maximum that the government will be exposed to for end-of-life extensions. You know, limit it to $25,000 so it doesn't go into the hundreds of thousands and ultimately into the millions. These things would have had a profound influence. Telling people they can't buy a quality policy, they can't buy a policy later in their lives, they can't buy a policy with a precondition that is expensive to treat unless they're willing to, unless you're going to impose or you're going to impose a 47% tax on them, and that's not going to lower the cost of health care. That's going to increase it. These are the kinds of things that increase it. Telling people, advertising nationally, don't worry that you can't pay for Obamacare. The government will pay for it. So the government chooses what policies that people can have. And then it tells those who either can't or don't want to pay for them, you just sign up for the government subsidy. We'll take care of that for you. That'll drive up the cost. There are so many factors, one of which is that the government now represents about 40% of the health care business in America, almost 50%. And as the party responsible now for that large share, all of the inefficiencies of government have weaseled their way into the system, and you've got now health care by the post office. I mean, it's just a disaster. And yet, the President of the United States lied about everything that was part of this plan to get it passed. And Congress won't repeal it. You know, if you lied about every aspect of your plan, if the architect of your plan now acknowledges that he lied on your behalf, then you ought to be able to repeal the plan. I can tell you in business, if you inked a contract based on fraud, that contract is null and void. The President of the United States got his socialized medicine through Congress by fraudulent means.
What also happens in business if your product doesn't provide what you say it provides?
You go bankrupt.
I'm pretty sure that they have things that you can't say that it doesn't.
Your policy can no longer be promoted as it previously was. It either has to be changed so that it provides what it promised, or you reduce the cost so that people can have their money back, or it's repealed. You know, the product is no longer available for sale. You know, government plays by different rules. They can cheat, they can lie, they can steal, and they do. Anything that government touches becomes a disaster. Look at the military. Grossly overspent. No accounting, no accountability. Goes into country after country and breaks them. False advertising on this notion of providing Americans with freedom. That's a complete and utter lie, and they know it. Highest suicide rate of any job in the world.
To be fair, there's not many things you can fix with a bomb or a gun. I mean, there's not many things that get fixed with a bomb or a gun.
Why fund them? Highest sexual abuse rate of any institution in America. Highest fraud in terms of people claiming disorders and receiving gazillions of dollars from the U.S. government. It's the only aspect of the of America where there is no integrated accounting plan. They have no idea what they have in inventory, what they've spent, what they've spent it on. It is a complete and utter disaster. Government can't do anything well except lie, cheat, steal, constrain people's freedoms, make a mess of things. Yeah. Obama Nation and Obamacare is an example of that. The thinking, Obama explained, was that maybe at that point what you should do is sort of cap the exclusion, the tax deduction that's available. So we're discouraging these really fancy plans that drive up costs. Now, there's no such thing as a fancy insurance plan. There's no such thing as the insurance plan driving up the cost. It's the cost of health care that has been driven up so that if you're old or have a pre-existing condition, you're going to pay a lot for a plan because the plan has to have more money paid in than they're going to pay out.
Well, here's the other kicker for me is I don't think these guys know what a health plan is to begin with. They don't pay for theirs. They just have it.
No, it's Obama has never paid for his health care plan.
He's never paid for his, so he has no idea what a health care plan does or doesn't.
He started working door-to-door as a neighborhood solicitor for a political company. And shortly thereafter, he was positioned to engage in politics, and he's been a politician the rest of his life. He's received his health care gratis to taxpayer. Never once has he had to negotiate a plan, pay for a plan, ever. This is a guy that's never worked a day in his life, ever. It's what the problem with America, one of a million problems with America, is you have these unqualified idiots that are making these kinds of decisions and lying in the process. So he said the president at that point hadn't yet signed off on a Cadillac tax, although he eventually would. But he did make his pledge. What I've said and what I've taken off the table would be the idea that you just described, which would be that you would actually provide, you would eliminate the tax deduction that employers get for providing you with health insurance because, frankly, a lot of employers then stop providing health care, and we'd probably see more people lose their health insurance than currently have it. And that's obviously our objective, and that's obviously not our objective in reform. I have no idea what he just said. I read it word for word. I've got no clue what he just said. But I can tell you that government offers tax incentives to condition behavior they want more of. If you want people to invest in education, you provide a tax deduction for education. You want people to pay for their own health care, you provide a tax write-off for the money that they're paying in health care, because then you're not taking it from the government. If people provide for their own retirement, they should get a deduction. They don't. The government wants people to own homes, so they allow a deduction for mortgage interest. That's the whole nature of income tax. You provide incentives through deductions on the amount that would be owned for things that the government wants more of, and then you have penalties for things that you want less of. Now, to penalize somebody for providing a quality health care insurance package for their employees is brain dead. And yet that's what the president did. The promise, of course, was at odds with how Gruber describes not only that provision of the Unaffordable Care Act, or Obamacare, but the intention of that provision. In one of the videos that surfaced in recent days, in which the man described by the Obama campaign as having written Obamacare, describes the many ways the voters he calls stupid were easily misled by the bill. So this is the architect of the plan, referring to voters as stupid because they were easily misled about the bill by those who were pushing it. Gruber says the Cadillac tax will do exactly what the president pledged it would not do. It will dissuade employers. So here's now Gruber telling an audience, video tape telling an audience, that the voters were stupid in their support for Obamacare, and that they were easily misled about the bill by those pushing it, which would include Gruber and, of course, the Obaminator himself. And then he said that the Cadillac tax, which is part of the plan, is going to cause exactly the opposite of what the president was touting, that by imposing the tax, there are going to be fewer corporations providing fewer employees quality coverage. It was obvious. You mean you'd have to be a nincompoop not to figure that out, but evidently the voters weren't smart enough to figure it out. And so they were lied to. Economists have called for 40 years to get rid of the regressive, inefficient, and expensive tax subsidy provided for employer-provided health care insurance, Gruber said at the Pioneer Institute. The subsidy is terrible policy. So what he wants is the bottom line right now is that if you provide health care for an employee, you write off the cost of the health care insurance. I mean, it's then, by the way, there's no difference between writing something off and losing the money. I mean, it's you write it off just like you write off a person's salary. And if you were to stop doing that, then there wouldn't be a company in the country that offers health care. Now, then if you did what the Obama Nation has done and say if you have more than 20 employees, you must offer it, and this is the policy you must offer, then the businesses will simply go out of business. I mean, that's the way that it works in a free enterprise system. You either write off your costs against income, or you are prohibited from doing so, at which case you are losing money and paying tax while you're losing money, which drives the company to the point of bankruptcy. But, of course, to Gruber, he says, it's really hard to get rid of things like that. Yeah, because they're part of generally accepted accounting practices. Gruber said that the only way that those pushing for Obamacare could get rid of the tax subsidy for employer-provider health insurance was to tax the more generous plans, mislabeling the more generous plans, Cadillac plans, calling it a tax insurance plan rather than a tax on people, when we all know that it's a tax on people who hold insurance plans. The second way was to have the tax kick in late, starting in 2018, and have its rate of growth tied to the consumer price index instead of the much higher rate of medical inflation. Eventually, the 40% tax on more expensive plans would impact every employer and every plan. You understand what he was talking about there? If you postponed what was voted on in 2010 to 2018, then what you have is so entrenched in the system that it's very difficult to remove. And number two, because of government interference and subsidies in the and healthcare, the inflation in healthcare is running 3 and 4 times inflation in the in consumer products at large. So if you look overall consumer price inflation, which may be 2% a year, and you take the inflation in healthcare costs, which are at 12% a year because of government interference, and you go out 8 years and then 10 years and 12 years, and you, if you tie your rate that you're going to tax these expensive plans to the to them rising with the tax exemption at the consumer price index rather than the medical inflation index, the healthcare inflation index, it's only a matter of time, very short period of time, between the difference in the escalation and the prices of those various things are going to cause every plan to be subject to the tax. That's what happened. That's what's going to happen. That means the tax starts out hitting only 8% of the insurance plan, essentially, according to Gruber. But then within 20 years, every plan is taxed. This was the only political way we were ever going to take on this policy associated with American taxation. Gruber said that those who object to the tax will be obligated to figure out how to come up with the $1 trillion that repealing the tax would take away from the U.S. Treasury. $1 trillion. Significantly adding to the national debt for a plan that's really abomination.